We're back. Welcome to episode 36 of A Legitimate Salvage, your episode-by-episode guide to the final season of The Expanse on Amazon Prime. Let's go around and introduce ourselves, because you've forgotten who we are.
I'm Katie Burt.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm...
I'm Chip Sutter.
It's you, Chip.
And I'm Warren Fry. And we've forgotten how
Nailed
to do this
it.
Thing. My God, how does this work?
Oh, God. Oh, no. Appalling.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. And welcome back to The Expanse, which is back for a 6-episode season that's way too short for my liking, and possibly the last we'll see of these characters on TV for a while. Wow. The show is back?
It's like it never left. It really does actually
it
feel
does.
Like it never left. It,
yeah. Well, especially because, like, I've lost all connection or sense of time.
That's true. It is 2020 part three.
And it has been a relatively short period of time between seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Actually, has it? Again,
I guess it's been a year. It was last year. Has it been? I think it's only been. I think it's been less than a year.
Well, last year it's.
I think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to Google it. Season 5 premiered on December 16th, 2020, and ended February 3rd, 2021.
Okay.
So it's been less than a year since we've had a new episode.
Technically speaking, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And we're into the end of it. So we are famously bad at reading. You know, we've read some of the short stories and things like that, but most of us haven't even cracked Leviathan Wakes. And
well, I did buy Leviathan Wakes.
I've got it too. It's waiting there for me.
I don't have it, so I guess I'm losing.
I have it on.
I think
Kindle
you might be
version,
winning.
So you're the only person.
So we are, of course, famously reacting solely to what we're seeing on screen. I'm inclined to. So I don't think it's much of a spoiler because it's sort of in the air. You know, this in season 6 is apparently a really sensible place to stop if you're going to stop running the series, because there's a time jump between the 6th book and the 7th book. So I'm thinking that this is probably going to be, once we're done with this series and we've had a chance to assess it and mourn it, I think that's when I'm going to start actually reading the books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good idea. Good idea. You don't want to do it in between all this.
So, you know, we're...
Although the time jump says to me, Next Generation Expanse is coming sometime, several
years.
I guarantee.
I hope
you.
So.
Well, how much has Amazon got besides Wheel of Time?
They have to wait 30 years and then they start making it. People keep talking about having to use old age makeup. I'm like, no, you take the long way around.
So what we're saying is we're waiting 30 years for holographic Stephen Strait and.
Mm-hmm.
No, go straight into your brain from Elon Musk's thoughts.
That's something to look forward to.
That's the price you're paying when he buys Amazon.
We won't need any CGI for all of the flooding. So,
that's
you know.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
The space,
exactly.
You know.
We'll just look outside our window.
Could be
way cheaper, right?
Yeah, this got bad quick.
So as usual, you know, we're going to speculate on what's going to happen, and the readers among us will just roll their eyes at us. But it's okay. This is a show for people who know the franchise and people who are watching it for the first time. And I'm so glad it's back. And we'll get into the conversation. But I think that it feels really, really appropriate for the times that we're living in. This episode did anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is our recap and review of the season premiere, Strange Dogs, and we have a handy dandy episode recap to go through before we start having the discussion. Take it away, Jim.
So we open on planet number 2 in ring number 673 with a young girl befriending alien animals with Laconia in orbit overhead. This is Strange Dogs' only reminder of all that ring weirdness that closed out last season. We learn from Avasarala and Bobby that it's been 6 months of Earth using its military to hold off Marco's rock attacks. The climate is failing, and Bobby and Christian are tired of doing nothing. On Ceres Station, boy Philip makes a friend, then he shoots his friend. Meanwhile, Drummer and her crew are on the run, salvaging for supplies and rescuing people where they can. The Rossi crew is another ship in the battle against the Free Navy. These crews are tired. Of course, it's time for the Rossi to stumble onto something that could shift the balance of power. Naomi realizes there is a stealth ship triggering the rock attacks. Holden relays the news to Avasarala, a reason to hope.
And that is episode 1 of 6 of season 6. And I'm going to give you my first impression and just throw it out to the three of you. When season 5 wrapped up, the vaccine was just trickling out, mainly first responders and senior citizens and people with immunocompromised. They were just beginning to get vaccinated. But we were still very much in lockdown world. And these little podcasts that we were doing were just like amazing linkages because we were all separated and stressed. Since then, and since we are coming back, you know, things are starting to open up. Things are starting to return to normal. But we're still under the shadow of the pandemic. New variant has just come out. Politics is all broken as hell. And we go into this episode and I'm like, this feels perfectly timed for me right now. Things are bad and people are looking for hope. And I was just wondering how this opening to the series hit you all.
Well, time for me to assert my Canadian-ness. Does that make me the ring? Because we're sort of separated from the whole politics part a little bit. Still stupid, but not quite as stupid up here. So am I like a little kid playing with aliens and not knowing anybody?
I hope that is.
Derp to derp, everything's fine. Oh, God, there's a frog that it's also a dog.
I hope that you have that.
I fully expected that thing to just sort of leap out like a Jurassic Park velociraptor. But
oh, yeah. So did I. That would be primo expanse right there.
Yeah. All the characters, almost everyone seems so exhausted. That felt real in terms of like the moment in time of like, I don't know, things are both better in certain ways, but also so uncertain. I think, that really resonated. It's always amazing how this show just feels.
Ripped from the headlines.
Yeah. And for it.
Yeah. Which.
It to feel so topical across 6 seasons and however many years that has represented. And just thinking about how much, at least it feels as someone in it, like our status quo has changed continuously over that period of time. It makes me wonder like what it is about the Expanse that like, what does the Expanse understand or what does it do that like is so, feels so real? And I think it is just its depiction of how both like people and systems respond to crisis and, you know, imbalances of power. And I don't know, there's just something so real about also how it depicts the connection between like the personal and the political that I think has always been true, but has maybe become more articulated and highlighted for a broader swath of humanity in the last few years in particular. Mm-hmm.
I think you can sort of draw a parallel between them feeling like they're getting jerked around by forces they can't control and barely understand and us doing the same.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the buildup to this, to build up to where we get in Strange Dogs is there right from the beginning in episode 1 of season 1. And we actually see the guy who was on the basically on the street corner in that very first episode talking about grievances, Belter grievances against the Inners. You know, he's back and he's singing the praises of Marco Arnaros and he said, this is what we always said was coming, you know. So I really do appreciate the world building that's gone into getting us to where we are.
I was surprised how fondly I felt about Sirius Station, spending so much time here. It made me feel very nostalgic for season 1 and was a cool way to start the final season. It felt really like full circle but also to see like the differences in what Sirius Station is now versus what it was in season 1, for better and worse.
I gotta know, Katie, did it make you nostalgic for, you know what I'm gonna say?
Miller?
Yeah.
Maybe a little, His hat.
I saw he directed some episodes, and I was like, and he was wearing the hat during that, which was in the behind-the-scenes pictures. I was just going to say what I found interesting, and I this is a bugaboo of mine, when they go to the future and something looks exactly the same as it did in the past, and I'm going to make a real stretch here, but when they show the breaking news thing and it's the exact same colors and the exact same font, which would be like showing like Victorian letters, like breaking news now. Mm-hmm. Or my perfect favorite example of this is in the terrible film Mission to Mars from 2000 or so, where they're rocking out to Van Halen. I'm like, that's like dancing to Camptown Races at this point. What the hell are you doing? So that was like, that took me out a little bit. I'm like, why is, I guess the color red is always going to work on humans, but why the exact same font? Why wouldn't it be like, I mean, if it's a future font, it looks dumb like it's from the 70s, right? So it does. So there's no real way to win on that one, but it did take me out.
I love that.
And it's a very small, I work in the news thing, right? So,
so Philip's friend, R.I.P. Philip's friend, summarizes Earth's situation, says Earth is dying. We kill it. It's not coming back. And Christian has an inspirational speech to close the episode, but there's her storyline with Bobby. Things are not going well. And I just wanted to check in on how we're feeling about Earth. And we presume Mars is in the same position. What Earth is looking like and feeling like compared to where we left it?
No. Not good. Not good at all. When they show her like what is a field in Toronto, but then they show Mediterranean, I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. oh dear. Oh, well, indeed. That's not good.
It makes me think too, the fact that it's Philip's friend that is bringing this up. There's been points on the show where, even in the end of last season, where it's like, oh, different factions of humanity can be united. And now it just seems like, oh man, like, are the Belters just like, in some way responsible for what may be kind of their own destruction in some ways? Because it's like, mm-hmm. he says like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to get this cool alligator jacket after like Earth is destroyed. But also it's like, if you destroy the corn farm and all of the supplies, like you exactly. can't, humans can't just live in space, you know? And I guess we have these rings and maybe Earth is like this vestige of a past humanity for these people, but oof, I don't know. It seems like Earth is, someone's going to do something fast.
Also, your leader doesn't seem to care about corn futures or anything else. He just cares about yelling on top of like stacks of crates and stuff, which, surprise, I'm really shocked by that.
In different ways, Marco and Philip are a cavalcade of toxic masculinity. Let's stick with Philip for a little bit because watching this, you know, I went through this real arc with him of feeling kind of contemptuous of him and then sympathetic for him and then horrified by him sort of in the end as he goes from just trading on his notoriety, screwing around to,
full douche,
to being actually a grown-up in trying to convince Marco and his lieutenants that, you know, you actually do need to do the work to protect and serve the people of Ceres. Marco's got no interest in that. So here I'm on Team Philip, and then Philip is having an attack of conscience that he sort of doesn't recognize over the genocide that they've been involved in, to just turning into a colossal and intimidating and harassing the bartender to shooting his friend. That's a hell of an arc for a character in one episode.
Yeah,
it felt so realistic, and it really captured, you know, listening to you, Chip, describe like your emotional arc over the course of that storyline. It captured that like cognitive dissonance of being both horrified by and horrified for someone, especially someone who has like some degree of power. It also, I mean, we know that Marco is not a good father, but
no, he is a very bad father.
Yeah, just reflecting on this episode, it's just he's given Philip so few tools to deal with the immense trauma and just basic like experience of living. And he's made that choice because it makes Philip easier to manipulate. And that just is so sad. Yeah, it just makes me really like dislike Marco even more.
Yeah.
Plus, we got to remember from that kid's point of view, Naomi abandoned him again. So, I mean, she had very good reasons to do so. But But that from that, that's what the way he's looking at things. And so I'm not that I'm justifying him blowing his
friend. It's hard for me to see any sort of anything that resembles any kind of happy ending for Philip that would feel realistic at all.
No.
Given the influences he has around him and what he has learned of the world because of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly the potential for a spark of conscience in him there somewhere, but he's not doing anything with it now, for sure.
He'd have to really remove himself from the situation. I feel like he'd need to find a new situation to, like, nurture that spark.
Yeah.
Which...
Also, he is complicit in the murder of millions.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's basically Hitler Jr. And try living with that at 18 or whatever he is, right? Or at all, for that matter.
Yeah.
But especially
we'll
that
take
age.
A look at another character who's trying to make amends later here. But Philip's not there. Not there at all yet. Something's broken, something's wrong, but he's breaking people around him to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then Marco, man, he's not the guy that we dropped an elevator on. He doesn't drive me crazy like that guy does.
Well, that's because Marco, like all evil people, has a certain charm to him. So unlike Diego or whatever the hell his name was, that elevator guy, we just outright hated him. There's nothing charming. He's just an annoying kid, right? Who need an elevator dropped on
him. I didn't really hate Diego.
I could not stand him. I could not. I'm a deep chip on this one. I hated every second he talked. Plus, he was annoying Miller so much that it's like, you know, I'm loath to be like Miller's best buddy, but I'm like, come on, Miller, just pop this guy. This is ridiculous.
Yeah,
anyway,
but
you know, for all his faults, Marco does have a certain evil leader charm, like the guy in the Warriors who's yelling at all the other gang members. Yeah. Like, he's that guy, right?
So yeah, I mean, and that's another question that I wanted to ask y'all because, as a good progressive, you know, my sympathies are hardwired to be with the Belters because the Belters have been historically oppressed by Earth and Mars. And all of that backstory, like we said, you know, it's been very richly built up. Marco has taken advantage of that, that grievance, and he's...
Yeah, that's familiar.
And yeah, very much so. And sometimes I watch this and I get this sort of feeling like, because Marco is such an over-the-top villain, basically. He's a genocidal monster who's doing stuff worse than we've seen Earth and Mars do so far. I feel a bit of a mixed message there somewhat in that if the message is don't mistreat your inferiors because they may come back on you, you know, I don't like that. I don't like that bit of nuance because it almost includes a message that the Belters should have just known their place. I don't think that's the message of The Expanse, but the fact that Marco is this over the top monster gives me a bit of pause.
I think it's interesting sometimes where I often will feel in other episodes like an internal struggle of like, when they give him a great speech to give about like the oppressed people of the solar system or whatever, I'm like, yeah. And I know that I'm like, oh, this guy is, he is great at propaganda and he's saying some things that like tug at my own like political leanings. But they, all of the speeches he gets in this episode, I was like, they're just kind of like, oh, whatever. He doesn't get a good speech like that in contrast to.
Yeah, they're crowd pleasers.
Yeah, and you know.
Well, he doesn't have to because he has more power.
He has more power. Yeah. And I wonder too if that's part of what, I don't know, the show is exploring at this point of like, all right, at what point does someone who's colonized or oppressed, like, what, when the power shifts, what do you do with that, right? And what, yeah, are you just turning it around and, you know, beating down the people who kind of beat you? And it's like, well, this is actively a war. So in some ways, you got to win.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it's getting
at,
maybe.
Do I feel bad about that?
Well, I think also The Expanse is so good at telling, like, multiple stories that, like, build to a larger truth, maybe. And if Marco were the only example we had of a Belter leader, then I think that might be more problematic. But because especially we have, you know, people like Drummer, we've had even like Dawes and Fred R. Johnson. Mm-hmm. And Ashford, yeah, like all these different examples of what oppressed belters have tried to do and what they've tried to create with a shitty situation.
Yeah, even with that, the even with yeah, the yeah. you know the interplay between Marco and Philip, you know, Marco is not taking care of belters.
You hear like an offhand comment about like, oh, we have kind of increased food production, and you're like, that sounds like it still means a lot of people are starving,
not enough food.
You know, like that's what that sounds like.
And Marco just rolls his eyes over spreadsheets.
I mean, I'm a little sympathetic, frankly, because I couldn't care less about spreadsheets either. But I'm also not running the asteroid belt now.
But also even in his advisors, like obviously some of his advisors, not all of them, but do also care about food and feeding the belters. Mm-hmm. Like that is at least something they've put time and energy into trying to figure out.
I do think it's contrasted, too, when we see like I think in if Christian was really a leader, like in I would probably have huge criticisms of her. Like, she's definitely leans in the, like, direction of being a little authoritarian or secretive. Not authoritarian, but at least secretive. And, you know, there's criticism.
Well, she wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's criticism in this episode of, like, from the press, whatever her name is, that one journalist who is always on the story. You know, and...
Oh, yes,
but she,
yes.
She also does like when they're bringing up like, oh, 500 people died from this rock, but it's still a success, that one advisor. And she's like deeply annoyed by this man of like, no, I do actually care about those 500 people.
But by the way, complete side note, but you know, those that series of pictures when they have like a quote and they have the pictures of the class and the Simpsons and all the kids are waiting for Bart to say something. And then the picture is the kids going, yay. That was me waiting for her to swear. I was like, yes, 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 yes. Destroy them all with profanity.
Yeah.
She's just so damn good at it.
I feel like she was relatively conservative with the swears in this episode.
I know. She was.
She was. So that means they're building up to like later on. Like episode 6 will just be nothing but her swear. I want to see her defeat Marco using only profanity.
Yeah.
You know, I know on YouTube there's got to be a supercut of her swearing, and I
can't watch that. I'll die with glee.
Too powerful.
So
exactly, too powerful.
Like I teased a moment ago, there's another character that's sort of on the road to redemption, very much more so than before. Clarissa Mal. Peaches, now part of the Rossi crew, not exactly accepted by anybody on board except Amos.
Can't say I blame him.
Let's talk about the Rossi crew chemistry right now. And Clarissa was trying to kill Holden, nearly killed Naomi, and now she's just part of the team. Mm-hmm. How's that all working out for you?
Well, the other thing is, forgetting about the actor behind Alex, Alex is not there, and that's going to cause problems too. And so her coming in, so the exact wrong person to come in to replace him, or more or less replace him, right? It's probably got to grate on them a bit.
I think, you know, reflecting on this just right now, I think if this were a longer season, I might be more into exploring the storyline. But as someone who has never really cared that much about Clarissa or felt like the show has done a good job, I don't know, like making me care about her or like articulating her motivations and how she came to be the person she is. I just don't want this final season to spend too much time on it, because there's other storylines and other characters and other dynamics I care about a lot more. But that being said, maybe it's also a way to really tell a story about the Rossi crew in general. Like maybe it's not really as much about her as it is about these other three characters that we've, you know, been with from the beginning.
Three characters who are exhausted and traumatized and dealing with stuff. And then here's this human reminder of everything that they've been going through for the last few years. And Amos is trying to integrate her into the crew, and he would just assume that everybody else forget what happened and that they just sort of move on, and people got to process.
this is a bad comparison, but it kind of reminds me of when there's like, say you have a favorite spot you like to go to for lunch, and all of a sudden a bunch of influencers decide it's their spot, and they take a bunch of stupid pictures of them looking stupid. That's kind of what she feels like, an influencer showing up and going, oh, I'm on the Rossi now. Click, click. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's not what they're trying to say, but that's the general vibe
the
I get.
The scene that made me just sort of lean forward, though, was between Amos and Naomi when Amos reminded her that, you know, you've pulled some shit too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, that is not the same thing.
I also think it's like really highlights all of their relationships well, because I wrote at one point when I was watching it, it's like the ship feels like in some ways so small. Like they're always like running into each other, having these conversations as if they like can't get away from this dynamic. But also the lack of Alex and the replacement of him with Peaches is like, also feels like everything is out of balance. Like four of the right people on that ship made sense, and it was the right crew.
An amount of space.
Like it didn't feel small, right? And you, go ahead, Warren.
Even the name Peaches feels like it's forced. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even think she likes it. I think he's just saying it. But also, I was going to ask Katie, you've actually been on the Rocinante. Is it that small?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's even, it feels even smaller. I was going to say, though, I think it's interesting listening to you say that, Jen, because having this storyline in parallel to the storyline of Drummer and the Tynan. We see there how much having a crew member who isn't able to step up or isn't able to be a part of the team in the way that the team needs can literally lead to people's death. Yeah. Like, can lead to everyone's death.
Yeah.
So I think having those two storylines juxtaposed is actually, I don't know if it was intentional at all, but is really smart.
Well, Clarissa is an asset in terms of like her skills.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Naomi's struggling, Jim's struggling. what hopes do you have for all of these characters as we move toward the conclusion of this series?
When Amos is like, I just want to kill Marco, that's why I'm here. And I'm only here to do that because he's trying to kill us. I just want that to happen.
I would like to see Marco die.
It does feel like it will give them some level of whatever's next, whatever they decide is next, you know.
I want Drummer to take Marco out, though.
Me too.
Yeah, I do too. That totally makes sense. Or, like I said, the aforementioned profanity death. But I have one more aside here. Marco's many crimes, including tossing asteroids at Earth. Besides that, his other crime is not only his usual bad 80s hair, but that bun. What in the hell was that all about? I was like, oh, this thing is back again? What is this? But he's exactly that guy. Yeah. He's totally the guy who works for a startup in crypto. You know, he's with a bun in his hair.
I mean, talk of things being timely. That hairstyle. It really says a lot.
I was just like, oh, God, what an atrocity that was. And I say this as a man with no hair, but still.
Yeah. Maybe I want the crew of the Rossi. This might just be too painful, but I'm just thinking of them sitting down for family dinner, having some lasagna.
It will be painful.
Yeah, no one can cook anymore.
In fact, I think in the trailer, didn't they have a shot of that? Maybe I'm imagining it, but I thought there was a shot of them doing like a dinner on the Rossi.
Nice. I hope so.
I know this is very unlikely to happen, but I want Practice to come back and maybe he can bring some plants and cook them dinner.
That sounds nice.
I loved the best.
I mean, we need farmers, right?
Exactly.
Bad.
He could fix that grain farm.
Well, the great thing about that guy is he's a Toronto mainstay, so I see him in a lot of Canadian stuff anyway. So I'm like, oh, that guy, the Expanse dude.
Are there any other warm and fuzzy characters from previous seasons that just we really miss? I think Practice is at the top of the list.
Oh, Elizabeth Mitchell.
Yeah, I don't know if she's warm and fuzzy.
No, she isn't. I just
was that the priest?
I hope she's doing okay.
Yeah, well, somewhat. She felt like you know in Next Gen where they would have some guest star come in as like a scientist or something. That's what she kind of felt like, the Next Gen character just kind of wandered in from Next Generation.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily makes sense for her to return.
No.
No, it doesn't. Isn't where is she? Is she like someone one of the
possibly
ring
under
or
a, who knows? Possibly under a rock.
Yeah.
Miller is Triangle Robot. That's who needs to come back.
Last question for now. We've only got 6 episodes this season, which is something that I missed. I wasn't aware of that until I saw it in the show notes. So this tells you how preoccupied I've been in recent months. I'm disappointed. I'm on the record as a Doctor Who podcaster that maybe 6 episodes is not enough for certain stories. Side note there, and I liked that episode of the Doctor Who, but that's another podcast. After seeing this first episode, do you feel like they can do what they need to do in 5 more episodes? And how does the pacing feel from other seasons? Mm. You know, and again, we don't know from the books that this season is drawing from.
If there's one thing this show is good at, it's climaxes. Like, they have fantastic climaxes. Although last season's climax seemed like kind of Return of the Kingish with all the different endings. Yeah. So we'll see. And this might be more of the same, which is fine. The more expanse I can get out of the 6 episodes, the better, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see how they... This is the first one, so it's tough to judge, really.
Yeah, because I do think that maybe part of the reason why they're so good at building those climaxes is because they have that space to have some quieter moments. Mm-hmm. But I do think that this first episode felt relatively quiet for a 6 episode season. I'm worried, and I hate when I know there's only a certain number of episodes left, how much more pressure I feel like I can put on the episode, because I want it to just, I'm aware of how precious it is. I trust the show so much, but I also, I'm really sad there's only 5 episodes left, and I think there's something inherently unsatisfying about a TV finale, because I think TV is a medium that's built to go on. And so I'm trying to just feel grateful for the episodes we do have.
A different show, I think I would be more concerned how they're going to wrap all this up. Like, thinking about how we started the episode with the stuff in the ring, or the rings, there's all these rings, and just feeling like we didn't even touch on that. Like, there's whole aspects of what they're going to address this season, presumably, that didn't even get addressed in this. Which, yeah, maybe if I didn't have so much faith in these guys, I would be more concerned. But I do think...
Yeah, like, what's happening with the Martian rogue navy? Like,
they're going to have to drop things that they probably would have preferred to not drop, and that they actually set up. So I think that's probably going to be the most disappointing part of the season. But I also think that's probably a better choice than trying to stretch more storylines across more storylines into 6 episodes. Like, choosing fewer storylines to really focus on and trying to do those well. I prefer that choice, and I think that might be the direction they're going in.
And the fact that they this episode really kind of focused on like our kind of core characters at this point makes me feel like that's what I want, is kind of this resolution for some of these characters, whatever that means as a resolution. Like, I don't even know what I necessarily want for them, but knowing that the show is probably going to focus on having that as how do we say goodbye to these guys? I think that makes me feel like, okay, I don't care about the mystery. I do care about the mystery of the ring, but it's not a show that's
if you're
built,
first to prioritize.
Yeah. This is not a show that's like, I have to find out why the polar bear was on the island or whatever by the end of the show. I never really watched Lost, but you know, whatever. These like shows where they're...
I didn't either, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like shows that are built on like having some sort of plot kind of answer. Even though the show does great plots, and I do care about like the political situation in the belt.
Having said all that, this show was on borrowed time to begin with. Like, we got 3 more seasons out of this. We shouldn't have.
And it's really coming back in 30 years, so.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. With your grand design, and with you as showrunner.
Yeah. I mean, you heard it here first.
They were able to give it a good conclusion for season 3. You know, you know, closing with that shot of the Rossi going through the ring gate for the first time, and the implication of the future that may be to come. They can probably do it again. It's just kind of weird, you know, that it's a weird challenge to provide some sort of closure when you know that there is more story out there that you may get to tell holographically or telepathically or whatever sometime down the road.
God, please no. Just tell it on a screen. I'm begging you all.
I mean, all shows in 30 years are going to be only holograms. So
I just hope.
I'll be 80, so I'll be reading
books. I just hope there are shows.
If I can
read. We won't know how to operate the holograms.
Yeah, some nurse will be showing me and I'll be like, I hate it.
Yeah, so the first episode of the last season definitely whetted the appetite for more. I'm feeling good about it. Any final thoughts about Strange Dogs?
I want to see what Bobby's going to do because we've got that hint that there's going to be more to what she's doing now than this terrible liaison job she can't stand. As anybody in communications, Chip, you can understand this. I gotta do talking points. This sucks.
I did love the line where the journalist, whose name I can't remember, I actually really like her character.
Mm. Not a good journalist, though? You're a little biased?
No. Yeah, when she's like, one thing I've always liked about you is that you're kind of terrible at lying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. When you can find a communications person who's bad at lying, that's a gold mine right there.
Also, not the best use of Bobby's skills to just be like helping Christian down from floating in her office or whatever.
I mean, she is intimidating. If I was a reporter and she told me to stop, I'd sure
as
hell
stop. That is true. Yes.
Well, I'm sure we'll have a lot more to say about Bobby and Christian next time. It's been a good resumption of the series and... We're looking forward to more, and we will be back next week as we look at episode 2, Azure Dragon. In the meantime, please follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter. You can, of course, find us on the Incomparable Network, where we're very grateful to have a home. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time.
Hope the whole planet doesn't pull you down.